40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off in Cameroon, where action resumes Tuesday at the Africa Women's Cup of Nations football tournament. There will be two Group A matches in the capital, Yaoundé. Cameroon will host South Africa, and that will be followed by a match between Zimbabwe and Egypt. Over the weekend, Cameroon, Ghana, and defending champion Nigeria scored victories. The Super Falcons of Nigeria spread their wings and soared to the most lopsided win, a 6-0 mauling of Mali. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to striker Asisat Oshola, who scored four goals, count them, four goals for the Nigerian women. Joining us now with more details on the opening weekend of action at the Africa Women's Cup of Nations is reporter Moki Edwin Kinzika in Yaoundé.
After waiting for long, anxiously waiting.
The 2016 Women's Africa Football Cup of Nations anthem has been blasting through speakers in major junctions of Cameroon's capital Yaoundé since the country's president, Paul Biya, declared the tournament open.
Je déclare officiellement ouverte.
He says he officially declares open the 10th Women's Africa Football Cup of Nations. In the opening match, host Cameroon mounted pressure on Egypt, scoring in the 23rd minute when Aboudi Ongene's header beat Egypt's goalkeeper Maha Sehata to a thunderous applause from an estimated 40,000 home crowd. Captain Mani Christine scored the second goal and sent Cameroon fans dancing and celebrating the whole night. Egyptian delegation leader Saharel Hawari says Cameroon was a better side and had the encouragement of its public.
If you're playing with the host, it's a lot of pressure, because of the spectators and the homeland and the media and the people and the response, you know, it's not easy.
Zimbabwe and South Africa played a 0-0 tie in the second Group A fixture. Ellis Desire, head coach of the South African team, says she is optimistic her team can still make it, even though it will face the group's favorite, Cameroon, on November 22.
I think any coach coming to the tournament would want to win it. You go to a match, not to draw, to lose, but you go to win it.
In Group B, based in Limbe, cup holder Nigeria beat Mali 6-0. Nigerian-born Obi Paul says he is sure his country will keep the trophy.
We are going to give them moral support, even financial support, to see that they maintain their trophy back home, Nigeria.
Bimila Etienne does not agree. He thinks his country, Cameroon, will win.
I'm optimistic that Cameroon is going to play very well, despite the fact that the Nigerians are showing up to be a very strong team. But I hope that Cameroon will challenge them, given that we are in Cameroon.
The eight-team tournament also includes Ghana, Kenya, South Africa and Zimbabwe, and concludes with the championship game December 3. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News. Yaoundé.
Voice of America, VOA.
Now let's go to Abuja, Nigeria, where reporter Samson Omale has more African football news for us.
One of Africa's representatives at the 2016 FIFA Under 20 Football Championship holding in Papua New Guinea, the Falconets of Nigeria, crashed out of the competition despite beating group leader Spain 2-1 in their final game on Sunday. Now to club football, where Mamelodi Sundowns gave a performance befitting African champions at the club level to defeat Kaizer Chiefs 2-1 this weekend in a high-profile South African Premiership showdown. And to Egypt, where Halley returned to the league summit after cruising to an easy 2-0 Egyptian league victory over El Ittihad El Habi on Saturday. Two second-half goals from Nigerian forward Junior Ajayi and Egypt playmaker Abdullah El Said gave Al Ahly their seventh win in 9 games in their bid to defend their league title. Staying with the Egyptian Premier League, Moeman Suleiman has resigned as Zamalek boss in the wake of chairman Murtada Mansour's skating attack on the team management following the 1-0 Egyptian league home victory of our bottom side Tanta. Elsewhere in Europe, Victor Moses has picked up his second Man of the Match award for Chelsea this season after he was voted as the Man of the Match in a 1-0 win over Middlesbrough. The Nigerian, who was substituted at the tail end of the game, was one of the liveless players on the pitch for Chelsea, tormenting Borough's left-back Fabio at will. And to the German Bundesliga, where Borussia Dortmund ended Bayern Munich's unbeaten run, edging a 1-0 win on Saturday, all thanks to current African Footballer of the Year player Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang 12th goal of the season, cutting the gap between the champions and their biggest title rivals to 3 points. Elsewhere, Yaya Toure demonstrated that it is never too late to say sorry as he made a triumphant return to Manchester City on Saturday, which made his manager Pep Guardiola feel as if he had almost signed a brand new player. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Tennis news now on The Voice of America. British star Andy Murray will end the year as the world's top-ranked men's player after he beats Serbian rival Novak Djokovic in the ATP Finals in London. Chris Bowers reports from the British capital.
As part of the build-up to this final, the organisers offered us on the stadium screen the perfect collection of strokes, and the player universally recognised as having the best backhand was Novak Djokovic. In the ensuing hour and 43 minutes, Djokovic showed that he's human, his backhand breaking down alarmingly as Andy Murray beat him 6-3, 6-4 to claim the year-end number one ranking.
I would like to try and stay there, obviously. I mean, it's taken, you know, a huge effort the last, you know, 5-6 months to get there. So I would obviously like to stay there. I'm aware that that's going to be extremely difficult because I had, you know, a great year this year and I only managed to do it by one match. So, you know, to repeat that again next year is going to be extremely difficult. But now that I've got there, I would obviously be motivated to try and stay in that position.
With Murray slow to start after his 3.5-hour semi-final, Djokovic could have pounced. Instead, the errors got to the rest of the Serbs game, and he made at least 4 howlers at the net that will no doubt make an internet bloopers video.
It's sport, you know. There are no rules. Every day is different. Every day you feel different. I guess this was one of these days where I didn't feel the ball as well as I wanted it. And that's all I can say. I just played very poorly, made a lot of unforced errors from the backhand side, and it just wasn't my day. On the other hand, credit to Andy for being mentally tough and playing the right shots, making me play extra shot in every rally, so he definitely deserved to win.
Murray is the player of the moment. He's been the best in the world over the last 6 months, and his final question was whether Djokovic was so dominant in the first part of the year that he'd spoil Murray's year-end party. The Scot has answered that in the affirmative and ends the year deservedly as the world's best tennis player. Chris Bowes for VOA Sports, London.
In pro boxing, American Andre Ward won a controversial unanimous decision over the weekend to take the Russian Sergey Kovalev's WBA, WBO, and IBF light heavyweight title belts in Las Vegas, Nevada. All three judges ringside at the new T-Mobile Arena scored it 114 to 113 for Ward, who won his 31st consecutive prize fight without a loss. But the decision did not sit well with Kovalev and many of the fans who watched the fight. The man nicknamed Crusher had Ward in all kinds of trouble early in the bout. Crusher wobbled Ward with a hard jab in round one, and then he knocked Ward down with a quick right hook in round two. Crusher Kovalev said he felt he won the fight. Crusher said he lost maybe three of the 12 rounds, and he called for an immediate rematch. And Andre Ward seemed open to a rematch. At the post-fight press conference, he said, and I quote, "A second fight would be a lot more clear-cut because I have been in with him." It was Sergey Kovalev's first loss as a professional. His record is now 30 victories, one defeat, and one draw with 26 knockouts. Meanwhile, on the undercard of Ward Kovalev, two-time Olympic champion Clarissa Shields of the United States easily won her first fight as a professional. Shields won a unanimous four-round decision over American countrywoman Franchon Cruz, who she beat three times in the amateur ranks. Shields says she has some big goals in the professional ranks.
It's never enough. You know, I always want more. I feel like I've been getting a lot of respect after my second Olympic gold medal. Even just leading up to it, so much more respect. But I feel like my overall goal hasn't been reached. And that's to go down in history as the best woman fighter to ever live. So with that, I haven't made it there yet. So my two Olympic gold medals mean the world to me. And I work very, very hard for them. But now I want me some green belts. And hopefully I'll be able to go back to 2020 Olympics and compete also. I'm just taking it one step at a time, but my confidence comes from hard work. I work really, really hard, and I train very hard. So that's kind of where this attitude comes from. It's not just, I don't think that somebody who doesn't work as hard as me can talk the way that I talk, because they don't really understand why. It's like, I work too hard to lose. I work too hard to let somebody beat me. It's like, I train and put my body through all this turmoil and all this pain so I can win and look good on TV and raise my hand up like this and smile after every fight. So it's all worthwhile.
That's two-time Olympic boxing champion Clarissa Shields of the United States, who was smiling over the weekend when she won her professional debut in Las Vegas, Nevada.
The Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
If you would like to leave a voicemail for possible use on a future Sunny Side of Sports broadcast, please call 1-202-205-9942. Once again, that number, 1-202-205-9942.
VOA!
When you hear the VOA identification, press 60, and please include your name and where you are calling from.
Voice of America!
Hello, this is Magnus Chisholm calling from Imo State, Nigeria. I love listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's always a daily delight of listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. Once again, Magnus Chisholm on with you, calling from Imo State in Nigeria, and wishing all the Sunny Side of Sports listeners all the best. Bye.
Because this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Waka, waka, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
I'm very, 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 very excited. Because
this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Time for Africa.
Joining us once again here in Studio 22 is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday to you, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world?
Well, it is Monday here, so of course we have Monday Night Football later tonight, but not in the U.S. As we've talked about throughout my time on the show with you, how the NFL is doing games in London. Well, the National Football League tonight is doing Monday Night Football in Mexico City. This is the first time in 11 years that the National Football League will play a regular season game in Mexico between the Houston Texans and the Oakland Raiders tonight. But a lot of the attention has been on the kind of security, the environment, more so than the game itself. I had seen reports on social media leading up to tonight that the Houston Texans players were told not to leave their hotel, not to order room service for fear that they might drink the water and get sick.
Mm.
And the Azteca Stadium in Mexico City, where they'll be playing, is a lot of criticism over the kind of environmental conditions there in terms of the fact that the stadium is 7,280 feet above sea level, so the air is very thin, and the pollution as well in Mexico City. In fact, Eric Wendalna, who was a former U.S. Men's national soccer player here in the U.S., said that Azteca Stadium is the worst place to play in a sporting event ever.
Wow.
So very strong,
pretty strong words.
Very strong words from a different sport, albeit, but still an athlete who has played there.
Interesting. A soccer player would make that comment, Andrew, because the U.S. Men's national soccer team will have to travel to that Azteca Stadium very, very soon, I guess in 2017, for a World Cup qualifying match. And they're not off to a good start, and that altitude just makes it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, between the altitude and the pollution, it may have an added element that they have to deal with on top of the play on the field.
What else is trending out there in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, we've also got a couple of feel-good stories, and we'll start with Andy Murray. He is the year-end number one for men's tennis after beating Novak Djokovic in the ATP Finals yesterday in London. So a lot of congratulations from throughout the sports world being sent out on social media to Andy Murray, but particularly from the tennis world and some very big names in tennis. Roger Federer tweeted out, he said, "Epic start to the year by Novak Djokovic, epic end to the year by Andy Murray, ending number one. Congrats, guys." Of course, that match yesterday in London at the O2 Arena between Djokovic and Murray, whoever won that was going to end up being world number one. That's how close they were in the rankings points. Stan Wawrinka tweeting out, he said, "Congrats, Andy Murray, number one, amazing season, well-deserved. see you next year.
Mm, okay.
There's no tweet from Novak Djokovic yet, but Novak Djokovic did tweet out about 2 weeks ago when Andy Murray got that number one ranking for the first time. He said, "Congrats, Andy Murray. Well-deserved. I'm really happy to be in the same era with you." So nice congratulations from Novak. And then another legend of the tennis game, Billie Jean King, she said, "One year-end singles number one, one member of the number one doubles team, one inspiring mom, three champs." And now that's because not only is Andy Murray the world number one in singles, his brother Jamie Murray is the world number one in men's doubles. So congratulations to both Andy and his brother Jamie and his mom Judy Murray, who has been their coach throughout their career, helped to train them, and has been always an ever-present figure in their matches and an ever-present figure on social media as well.
Big year indeed for Andy Murray, winning in London, winning that number one ranking to end 2016. Let's not forget, he also won his second gold medal in Rio de Janeiro at the Olympics. Getting back to Federer's comments, Andrew, about that epic start and epic finish, I don't think Djokovic will remember that as one of his epic performances in London.
No, and it's amazing how quickly Djokovic has kind of fallen by the wayside after the U.S. Open. Everybody assumed that Djokovic would end the year as number one because he was so far ahead in the ranking points, and Andy Murray just went on a tear. I think he's 23-1 since the U.S. Open. He's won four titles, five now, I guess, if you count the end-of-year ATP title. But now just amazing play from Andy Murray. And even though Novak sent out that congratulatory tweet when Murray captured the number one, I think there was a tinge of maybe disappointment that he had not reaching that pinnacle of the tennis world.
Well, I guess he'll now enjoy some rest and come back in Australia in January and maybe reclaim that number one ranking. Who knows?
They are so close, Djokovic and Murray, in the rankings that it could go back and forth. In fact, the ATP only ranks the players once every week, but if they ranked them daily, the number one would have gone back and forth between Djokovic and Murray five times this week as they played in London. So that gives you an idea of how close they are in the ranking points.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, we have another feel-good story out of college football here in the U.S., Division I college football, and that's Joe Thomas Sr. Joe Thomas Sr. played his first college football game for South Carolina State this past weekend. But what makes Joe Thomas Sr. noticeable and notable is that he is 55 years old, and that makes him the oldest ever Division I college football player to play. He is a running back. He ran for 3 yards, so he got he moved the ball forward, and his teammates celebrated by giving him the game ball. They carried him out on his shoulders, and in a statement afterwards, he said it was the happiest day of his life. Now, the backstory here is that Joe Thomas Sr. was a businessman. He had a construction company, and due to the recession in the economy, he lost that business. So he decided, you know what, I'm going to pick myself up, dust myself off, go back to college and get a degree in engineering. And that's how he ended up at South Carolina State. And that's how he ended up on the football field. But there is another element to the story that part of the reason why he ended up on the football field was because of his son, Joe Thomas Jr., who plays for the Green Bay Packers. He's a linebacker for the Green Bay Packers. And unfortunately, I don't believe he was able to watch his father's game live. He was on the team plane that Green Bay was flying out to Washington to play the Washington Redskins, where they lost last night in Sunday Night Football. But he said that he was very proud of his father and was very encouraged that he was living out his dreams in doing this. So shout out to Joe Thomas Sr. For an amazing accomplishment. You can play at any age, it really shows.
Great story. And I think I read where he's partially deaf, Andrew, Joe Thomas Sr.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but it's, it would only add to this kind of legendary, amazing story. In fact, one of the tweets I saw, somebody said, this sounds like a Disney movie, and they're waiting for the film to be made, the Joe Thomas Sr. story, that you can play college football at any age. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe a TV special or a movie about him.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter, and we'll hear from you again on Tuesday.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the November 21st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to that dynamic duo of VOA engineers, Skip Sisk and Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has partnered with the countries of East Africa to counter violent extremism. On a recent trip to Kenya and Djibouti, U.S. Deputy Coordinator for Counterterrorism Michael Ortiz met with senior government officials, local and county officials, and members of civil society who are working to counter terrorism and violent extremism. Kenya fulfilled its pledge to host a regional Countering Violent Extremism, or CVE, summit in June 2015 and is emerging as a regional leader on this issue. In recent months, the Kenyan government introduced a national countering violent extremism strategy and appointed a senior-level diplomat to lead and coordinate implementation of the strategy's action plan. During this trip, Deputy Coordinator Ortiz discussed with Kenyan officials the importance of partnering with communities and civil society. He also emphasized President Barack Obama's and Secretary John Kerry's message that protecting human rights and building trust in security forces is essential to preventing and countering radicalization. Mr. Ortiz underscored that Kenya can benefit greatly by working closely with civil society, religious leaders, and its international security partners to end violent extremism. Online recruitment and radicalization to violence remain serious challenges, and Mr. Ortiz emphasized that we must do more to educate parents, teachers, and other community leaders on ways to intervene with young people before it is too late. Local communities on the front lines in the fight against violent extremism must be empowered to stop the process of radicalization to violence. That is why the United States has helped establish organizations like the Strong Cities Network and the Global Community Engagement and Resilience Fund, and launched initiatives such as the Global Counterterrorism Forum's Initiative to Address the Life Cycle to Radicalization to Violence. Just this year, the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development started implementing a $7.5 million effort to support the Counterterrorism Partnership Fund in Kenya. In Djibouti, government officials are collaborating with young leaders to address the challenges of violent extremism in partnership with East Africa's Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. Under IGAD's leadership, the new East Africa CVE Center of Excellence and Counter-Messaging Hub will provide a platform for East Africans to share best practices, collaborate on research on the localized drivers of violent extremism, and develop innovative counter-messaging efforts. The U.S. will continue to assist its partners in East Africa to tackle terrorism and violent extremism and stands ready to lead in this fight.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
How about the brotherly love? Is it immortal? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing sibling rivalry. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 1730 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Joyce Banda, the former president of Malawi. She'll discuss what Africa can learn from the U.S. elections and the peaceful transition of power from one leader to another. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.